Good morning and welcome everyone, and thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with CAA on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way we experience life and spirituality. And if you're listening live, today is March 1st, 2019. Kind of snuck up on me, I guess, because that February month is so short. But yes, this is March 1st, 2019. And my guest today is Susan Dugan, who is a Course in Miracles teacher and author of multiple articles and books based on forgiveness and living A Course in Miracles. And about, I'd say almost a month ago, because she's always on the first Friday of the month, right after we had been together, she had said, hey, when we get together next time, let's talk about lesson 79, which is let me recognize the problem so it can be solved. Well, of course, a whole month goes by and I'm thinking, you know, I'm kind of looking at the calendar and go, oh, shoot, Susan and I need to come up with an idea. And of course, we often go to whatever we're studying, whatever is going on for us at that point. So I've been really heavily into two different things by Ken Wapnick. One of them is still that little book that we've talked about before, because I'm kind of obsessing about it, truthfully. When 2 + 2 = 5, reflecting love in a loveless world. So I just keep rereading it and keep going through it. And then I'm also listening to Living A Course in Miracles, which is a workshop that Ken did many, many years ago. And I've got it, you know, digitally or electronically. So I'm listening to that in the mornings. And one of the things that just keeps coming up for me is something that you hear in a course quite a bit, which is solving the problem where it is rather than where you have set it up. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that. Probably 100, maybe more. And of course, I go, yeah, you got to solve the problem where it is, solve the problem where it is. But this week, as I was listening to that and reading that, and it just kept coming up, there really was this kind of aha moment about the fact that regardless of, we just keep seeing these problems as occurring in the world. And I was paying a lot of lip service to the idea, well, the problem really isn't in the world. The problem is the teacher that you have decided to see the world with. You know, the problem is the separation. And can you take every single problem back to that? You know, or are you going to keep trying to solve all these problems in the world? So it really was kind of this eye-opening thing. And so I wrote Susan and I said, hey, let's talk about that, you know, on the show. Well, she very, very diplomatically said, well, CA, we already decided on a topic. And we decided a month ago that it was going to be lesson 79. But of course, lesson 79 is almost exactly what I had suggested to her. So there again, it may be an illusion, but I'll tell you what, there's a lot of synchronicity in this illusion of ours in what we consider to be the world. So I thought that was kind of funny. And no matter how you look at it, that's what we're talking about today, which is one of the core ideas in A Course in Miracles. And I know that Ken often says, you know, sometimes if you can grasp even one idea, if you really understood what this meant, you wouldn't need to read the book again. You wouldn't have to do anything because it's so holistic. It all goes together. And so that's what we're talking about today. So if you are a student of A Course in Miracles and you happen to have that workbook for students, you might want to turn to lesson 79, let me recognize the problem so it can be solved, because that's what we're going to talk about. And also, if you'd like to meet us over on our private group on Facebook, you can do that. Many of you already know how to get over there. But if you don't, you can go to our website, which is 12radio.com. On the left side of the page, look to that listing. And in that listing, you're going to see the word chat. When you click on chat, it will literally link you to Facebook where you can ask to join our group. And then you can come in and ask questions or make comments. So I'll be looking for you over there if you'd like to join me. And meanwhile, let's welcome Susan to the show. And like I said, she is actually the author of 3 books, Extraordinary Ordinary Forgiveness, Forgiveness Offers Everything I Want, and Forgiveness, the Key to Happiness. And as I was just telling her the other day, that she was mentioning there are so many people that have written Course in Miracles books, and I read some of them. But I said, but you know, the one thing that is so different, I think, about Susan's book is she is just sharing so authentically what her experience is living A Course in Miracles. I love reading her books. They're all what I would consider little essays or vignettes about different things that are going on for her. What's going on in her head? What's going on in her heart about living A Course in Miracles? So I highly recommend those books to you if you want to pick those up over on Amazon or, find those on Susan's website. So Susan, welcome and thanks for being with me this morning.
Oh, thank you, CA. It's always a pleasure.
Well, and thanks for your suggestion of Lesson 79, even though I obviously did not remember it.
Well, and I, as you were just telling this story, I was thinking, well, I don't remember that it was a month ago because it seems like it was like a couple days ago. Because, this lesson actually could be our lesson for every single day, right?
Right.
Let me recognize the problem so it can be solved is really, what we're always resisting doing, as you were saying, we want to see the problem where we set it up and not where it is, which is in the mind, and we want to deny responsibility for it, and to constantly deny, we're innocent victims of the problems that seem to be coming at us at warp speed all the time, like some sort of video game, and yet it's always, all of this is only happening within the one decision-making mind, which is really the one child of God's mind that's pretending it is separate from God, but we're not aware of that. And we keep fleeing into the world mindlessly searching for answers to something that doesn't even exist where we're looking for it. So I felt like I had sort of an aha moment too last week with this again, which I realized they repeat, we keep circling, this is a journey from our perspective and it's not really linear. So we come back to that. We'll have these aha moments and then we become afraid again and we go running back into the world. And but anyway, I did sort of become right-minded, or had a moment of sanity last week where I realized that I was still feeling bombarded by all of these problems in my life and in my so-called life, and that I really, what I was always resisting doing was really joining with the part of my mind that knows the answer to all problems, which is always the belief in separation, trying to make that belief real by, again, denying responsibility, seeing ourselves as victimized, when in truth we could be peaceful no matter what's happening in our lives. And always at the root of that is a desire to be me against the world, mm-hmm. Put myself first to, I'm astonished these days at just the way we set it up, the way I've set it up, the way it represents in my dream is really, it's so true what Ken said and what the Course is saying, that I'm always trying to make everything about me. I don't really, I'm the hero of my dream and I want to, everything revolves around me. All of the, the solutions to the problems have to work for me. And I don't really give a damn whether they're for anybody else, I mean, really, if we're really honest with ourselves, we're all doing that. We're very, very myopic about what, just seeing that we need to have our needs met and we need to have them met now. And our frustration with not having those needs met and not having things go our way according to me. And so the recognition that I had in a specific example that it was occurring in my life again, recurring in my life because it's going on for almost a year, but is that we've had our house on the market. We're going on a year since we signed that contract. So we put it on last April, but the process of getting it ready to go to market last year, it's been about a year. And so, it's still on and we've had to lower the price several times. We just did that again. And I was, feeling so frustrated with this process, and because the result of it has seemed to be that I can't make any plans. I'm completely we have unpredictable showings all the time. I'm constantly sort of a slave in my complaining that I was doing mentally to the home,
Yeah.
And I'm like a hostage in my house. That's the way I'm portraying it to myself, and a hostage of these forces outside my control. And we have this need to move on, and we have this need to downsize financially and blah, blah, blah. And so this was really bugging me again. And I just really kind of in exasperation sat down and said, I don't know the answer to this. I just don't know how this can be solved. And I want your help, Jesus, Holy Spirit. And I know it's not that the help really isn't about form, because in truth, there isn't the form that we think there is. But I'm at my wit's end, and it's about this specific problem and so forth. So I basically was drawn also to this lesson and also to Ken Wapnick's wonderful workshop, Cast No One Out. And the subtitle is Making It About Them. And I had listened to that before, but I haven't gone back to it in several years. And so I dug that out and I started listening to that. And really what, as a result of kind of, revisiting that material and really that sincere desire, or at least recognition that I'm wrong and I don't know what the problem is, but it seems to be this problem, and I help, And what was interesting to me and so comforting ultimately was that the answer, which is still unfolding, it came in the form of thoughts, like being sort of flooded with thoughts about making it about them, about that I'm not alone in this process, and that even though the world's way in transaction, big transactions like this in our lives are, there's all this fear about winning and losing. I mean, that's the ego's mantra. Is always, one must win and one must lose, one or the other, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which reflects that belief that, we won at God's expense. We ran away from God, and that was real. And now we carry the guilt and must pay the price for that. And that's what we act out in our relationships. So what was coming to me was just lots of thoughts about, making it about everyone involved, including the house. The house is involved, because we need to buy another one at this point. And thinking about our home and how wonderful it's been to us, and our home deserving to have a wonderful buyer come to it, and the buyer deserving that does come to it, deserving to have a wonderful transaction on their part that's a win-win, and a win-win for everyone. And really beginning to think a lot more broadly that about the realtors involved, about the whole process, that we're on the same side, that it isn't true that the ego's conviction that one or the other is the only way to solve the quote-unquote real problem of separation is, and to compensate for it, is that's based on a lie. That's a lie. And in truth, not necessarily in form, but at the level of the mind, we have shared interests. We're all trying to find our way home. We're all desperately fearful that we can't. We all believe we deserve punishment for what we secretly, this guilt that we carry, and we don't know where it comes from, but it comes from that belief that we threw God's love away. And so everybody's fighting that same hard battle, and that the correction for it is the kindness, is joining with that principle of that memory of whole love that remains in our mind that we call Jesus, Holy Spirit, that sees us all as equally deserving of love and abundance and peace, and comfort and harmony. And So nothing's happened. The house hasn't sold yet. We haven't gotten any offers, any real offers. But what I noticed was the process just seems, the experience of it has just been so much more peaceful and kind and supported and without fear. And so, you know, whatever happens, and each time I go cycling back in trying to control the situation, which I do, you know, I don't know, you know, at least once an hour, sometimes several times an hour. I try to just kind of rein myself in and say, no, you know, I've asked for the problem to be solved. I've brought it to the answer and the problem will be solved. It's not, you know, I don't need to keep stressing about trying to manipulate it for my gain, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so it just really changed the whole thing. And I do think that that's what is at the heart of this lesson. Let me recognize the problem so it can be solved. Because the problem, I'll read the first paragraph of that. A problem cannot be solved if you do not know what it is. Even if it is really solved already, you will still have the problem because you will not recognize that it has been solved. This is the situation of the world. The problem of separation, which is really the only problem, has already been solved. Yet the solution is not recognized because the problem is not recognized. And that's because we keep it to solve ourselves. And there's no chance in hell,
yeah.
in the hell of the ego thought system, that that's ever going to happen. You know, because that's not where the problem is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I want to really emphasize this story that you're telling. I wasn't sure if you were going to tell it this morning or not. And I thought, well, maybe I will tell it because I've actually been thinking about it ever since we talked about it. And I mean, on one hand, it seems so intuitively obvious. And yet, how, you know, we don't approach life this way. And when I think about it, I mean, I've been involved in similar situations of buying and selling houses. And it's so easy to start getting into that mentality of either there's not enough houses on the market and I've got to get the best bid or the first bid, or I've got to somehow figure out how to get above all these other people. Or if I'm selling the house, I've got to figure out how to convince the buyer to give me the most money, or I've got to keep my realtor happy, or whatever it is. And it's so easy to slip into that place because the ego, I mean, it's our pattern. It's what we know. It's either us or them.
Right.
And so it's so easy. It's easy to slip into that place. And instead of, you know, going right back to what the Course always talks about, a shared interest, we are all the same. We want the same thing. We have the same issues. We have the same wrong mind, the same right mind, and the same decision maker. And yet on that level, that's it. All of a sudden, even in the world, within the illusion, coming to that conclusion of going, you know what? I want a buyer who's going to feel like they made a really good deal. I want a buyer who feels like, oh my gosh, I just won the lottery. I've got this incredible home that somebody loved, somebody took care of, and meant so much to them. I just found the most wonderful property. You want the realtor to be happy and go, wow, this was such a great bonus for me. And you want to be happy and feel like, what a great deal we made. And how different is it when we see it as there are shared interests here? We can all be winners versus approaching the situation as there's got to be a winner and there's got to be a loser, and the winner better be me.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, I mean, talk about peace. I mean, it's like, oh my God. You know, and in fact, I'll tell you a situation that happened to me years ago, and I wish I could say I'm the one who turned it around, but I did not. The situation is, well, I had joined a women's group and was, you know, they asked me to be the treasurer on the board of directors. And I said, okay, because I had a master's in, you know, business, and I thought, sure, this is, you know, a piece of cake. And they kind of had assured me that everything was in place. They had a 501c, you know, they had done all their legal paperwork, et cetera. Well, guess what? They hadn't. They had been in operation for 2 years and they had never filed their legal corporate information with the IRS. So what do you think happened?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the IRS, now I'm the treasurer and I have a personal invitation to meet with the IRS. And it was like my personal nightmare, you know, and, you know, not that I thought they were going to hold me liable or responsible, but I just couldn't believe, how did I even get into this situation? So I was mad at the people. I was mad at the group. I was mad at the previous treasurer who had assured me everything was in order. And now I've got to go talk to the IRS. And every single fear, you know, in my mind comes up. But I go to the meeting, and I'll tell you what, I don't even remember the person, really. I think it was a woman, but that's not important. But the point is, they're just like, you know what, we just need to get this straightened out. You know, in no way do we want to punish you or get you. We just want this all straightened out. So show me what you've got, and I'll show you how to fill out the paperwork, and we're going to get this taken care of. And I was like, what?
You know, yeah, it could be IRS, not be an enemy.
Yeah, I mean, I was like, yeah, what happened to my enemy? That's what right. I was expecting. I was expecting the enemy. And this right. person is so clear. Hey, we just need to get this taken care of. That's all. You know, this is no big deal. Let's get it taken care of. Show me what you got, and I'll explain to you what you need to do. And that was it. And I was just, it took all the wind out of my sails. Totally. But it's a good thing for me to remember. And I often do remember that I so want to paint certain people or organizations or groups as my enemy. You know, it's me or them. And, you know, you took charge of the situation and said, where are the shared interests here? And by turning that around for yourself, you turned it around. And like you said, it didn't make the house sell. It hasn't changed the situation really, but it's changed your experience of the situation.
Quality of the situation, absolutely. And it has seemed that, you know, that it's just gone more smoothly, and there's been sort of more positive energy and conversation and all of that around it, because why wouldn't there be, you know?
Uh-huh.
It, just because, you know, I'm the dreamer of the dreams, so. If I've withdrawn my need to be attacked, you know,
right,
then I don't have to see it that way, right?
Right.
So, yeah, you know, I'm going to read you something because it's so it was so funny. In my Tuesday night class that I teach here in Denver, we were just finishing up chapter 25 at the same time that, you know, I was also looking at lesson 79 and listening to Cast No One Out, making it about them. And so all of those principles were also reflected in chapter 25 and this final section. And there's one paragraph that is so relevant, I think, to what we're talking about that I had earmarked anyway. So I thought I might read it. And it just, so it's in the last, it's in a section at the very end of chapter 25 called The Justice of Heaven. And it's paragraph 7, 8, 9, or 8. And it says, unless you think that all your brothers have an equal right to miracles with you, you will not claim your right to them because you were unjust to one with equal rights. So meaning that, you know, we all have to share the same interests, right? The same right to God's love.
Mm-hmm.
Seek to deny and you will feel denied. Seek to deprive, and you have been deprived. A miracle can never be received because another could receive it not. Only forgiveness offers miracles, and pardon must be just to everyone. So, you know, again, forgiveness is really just seeing that I'm wrong about that belief that it's one or the other. You know, the peace of God is for all of us. The love of God is for all of us. The endless abundance of God is for all of us. The equal right to God's love includes us all. And if we're living our lives opposite to that, we can't possibly ever be at peace.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So, we can't really do that alone. We have to consciously connect with that teacher of peace in our mind in order to kind of keep realigning ourselves back to it, because you know, we've kind of programmed the illusion of a self that we are to just mindlessly keep searching out there. And so, you know, the workbook of Course in Miracles is the part of the course that is the mind training, you know, teaching us that again and again throughout our day. And this lesson talks about, you know, throughout your day, the practice of this today will be applied whenever a problem seems to arise in your day. Well, that's going to give you a lot of chances to practice, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Because our day is like just a series, again, of, you know, that video game of asteroids coming at you, of problems, right?
Mm-hmm.
So every time that happens, if we can kind of train ourselves to say, wait a minute, you know, I'm wrong about, let me recognize the problem as it is so it can be solved. Because the way I'm going to try to solve it right now, running into the dream and trying to solve it through the ego thought system of one or the other, will only keep that guilt going and then create another problem.
Right.
And now that doesn't mean that we stop dealing with things in form. You still have to, you know, I still have to go through whatever papers I need to sign and whatever process needs to happen. And if we get an offer, go through that and, you know, and go through whatever, you know, mortgage we need to do and all of that. But at the same, but if I can first become, take it back to my mind, to my teacher, to that inner comforter and, you know, wisdom, source of wisdom and love for all in my mind, kindness for all in my mind, then it, you know, I will be coming from a right-minded place, and it does not have to be a conflicted, stressful experience. And it does not have to be an experience in which I'm very, very fearful that I'm going to lose. It will be an experience in which I recognize that everybody here is on the same side. And no matter what happens, you know, we'll deal with it and it will be okay. And I don't have to see people as enemies. We're all in this together.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm going to read you something, too, from the 2+2 book.
Okay.
That Ken says, because of course everything to me, I mean, it's so profound, but this is when he's summarizing or giving a summary of the entire book. And I don't know, this statement just sounded like it was like boom, almost like God handing it down, you know, from the mountain or something. And this is what he said. And I think it's a combination really of the course itself, but put it in Ken's words. And he said, the key is to recognize and accept the sun is everyone. If you do not see your purpose in the world as healing all the spots of darkness in your mind, which would exclude people or groups from the circle of atonement, you will never know the Father or yourself.
Yeah.
And I went, I mean, really, it was like, boom, I could just hear it, you know, when I read
right.
it. You know, just everything. The sun is one. And if you can't finally get that this is about healing the spots in your mind, those places where you want to exclude people or groups, then you will never get this.
Absolutely. That's a wonderful quote. And you know, the course, forgiveness is always only about the healing of my mind.
Yes.
There's no other mind. And, you know, I mean, we're all part of the same mind. And all we're responsible for, our only purpose is to mind our own mind, you know?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, yeah. Mind your own mind.
Yeah, I mean, it's not about, and those spots of darkness are, as Ken was saying, are everyone that we want to exclude from this, all the ones we love to hate, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when we're in fear, when we're thinking only of our own interests, that it pretty much puts everybody in that category, doesn't it?
Right.
Because, you know, I'm desperate. I've got to survive as an ego. We're in that mode of, you know, it's me against the world. And honestly, when we're identified with our ego, we're always in the mode of me against the world. You know,
yeah.
That's my only hope. And our secret agenda is always let the world abuse me, because, you know, that just proves my point.
That's right. I'm a victim.
Yeah.
I'm not responsible.
Right. I exist at God's expense, but it's not my fault. You know, look at these. Look at these sinners out there. And so we get a lot of mileage. You know, I've gotten a lot of mileage out of the fact that I've been a victim of my, you know, this house selling situation for almost a year. So, you know, it's kept me from having to deal with just about anything else, you know. I can just go back to that all the time, you know?
Yeah.
And so it doesn't, but that's a lie, because there's always something. As soon as this problem gets solved, again, it's not about the problems in the world. you know, there'll be another problem. Then there's the problem of buying the house. Then there's the problem of moving. Then there's the problem of, you know, whatever happens after that. I mean, the world is a problem generator. That's the way we made it.
Yes.
Right? So that's the way we set it up. So, you know, always this is about, you know, making this the purpose, changing our purpose to this being my classroom, this being another opportunity for me to heal my mind about the world, to heal my mind about my relationships and those spots of darkness that I cling to and keep going back to. And, you know, often too are spots of darkness, you know, the ones that are most difficult are the ones, they're chronic, the special relationship ones, the lifelong ones, you know, people we live with, the people we grew up with, the people we work with, that we're in constant contact with. And you know, those are difficult because that's where we act out our ego battles. And so, you know, in most of our big transactions, quote unquote, they involve our special relationships too, right? So there's always that trading off of guilt that goes on within them. And again, we just have to remember our purpose is to learn that we're on the same side, you know, that everybody deserves the peace of God, that Jesus sees everybody, the equality of only the equality of the sonship, not in form, but in content, that everyone deserves the love of God, that's our birthright. That has never, ever been compromised in any way and never could be. And we want to align ourselves and with that awareness so that our lives begin to more and more reflect that principle as we go through our lives and whatever we have to do.
Yeah.
You know?
That's right. I was just kind of reflecting on, you know, when you were speaking earlier. Now, I mean, we expect this from children, but the truth is we do it all the time ourselves. And that is, I was on the phone this morning with a sister and she was reminding me that we have a niece that's going to be a year old this weekend.
Aww.
And she said, so I was thinking about going to that store and getting those little tiny bundt cakes because I thought that might be fun and you could come over and we could celebrate her birthday. And then and by the way, my sister's on a speakerphone. Mm-hmm. And a four-year-old niece is listening to this conversation. And she says, well, and what, you know, my baby sister can't eat, I will eat. And we're like, yeah, that's okay. That's fine. And then, you know, we continue to talk and my sister is saying, but you know what? Now they're predicting snow. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to get to that store, blah, blah, blah. And so I said, well, you know what? Maybe I can make some cupcakes. And so then the little four-year-old chimes in again and she goes, and then you can make a cake for me that has Paw Patrol on it.
That has what?
Do you know what Paw Patrol is?
Yeah.
If you don't have little ones, you may not. It's this cartoon that little kids love. And I think I mean, they're all dogs and they go off and they save people. I mean, they're Paw Patrol because they're like, you know, they're always saving somebody from some situation. So she said, I want a Paw Patrol cake. And then she said, and by the way, and then she named somebody, and I don't know the characters in the show. She goes, it has to have that character on it because he's my favorite, okay? And I'm like, okay, I got it. You know, this is all about you.
Yeah.
Forget baby sister's first birthday.
Right, exactly, yeah. That's a great example. And really, we never, you know, there's no grown-ups here. I mean, we learn to hide that behavior better. But it never goes away.
No, and I think that's why it's so charming is because in a four-year-old, that's exactly what you expect.
It's just right out there, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, hey, what about me? I need a cake.
Yeah, that's cute. That's very cute. But, you know, that is, I mean, it as Ken would say, but there's something not so cute at the root of it.
Well, yeah. Right, and that's it. There are no grown-ups here.
Right, right. There's not. And, you know, the Course talks about that constantly, that we're never talked about as anything beyond like elementary school, you know?
Right.
So we are in school and it's very primary usually, you know, I mean, we're really, we have so hardwired ourselves into the thought of make of it being all about me, you know, of me being the hero of this dream of my experiment in individuality, and at all costs, you know, it's me against the world. And we love stories about that. I mean, when you think about all great novels and dramas and, you know, all of the Greek tragedies and so forth, they're all about that, aren't they? The hero's journey. The hero's journey is, you know, at great, it requires great sacrifice and slaying dragons and cyclops and, you know, under attack from all sides, right? And to get to whatever the prize is. And you know, that's the way we all feel. And then the prize, what is the prize? The prize still ends in death here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, and we keep seeking and really never finding. And when we finally get whatever we've identified as the prize, our elation lasts for about 5 minutes, you know? And then it's like, what's the next cake that we're going to get?
Right.
So, yeah. It's so embedded in our psyches that it takes a lot of practice and vigilance to even begin to start to train our minds to question, you know? And so the healing of this comes through that practice. And then we do, you know, eventually we do have times where it's just there. We remember, oh yeah, you know, I don't want to go there. It's going to hurt if I go there.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not going to ever find a solution for it. And so I want peace instead of this.
Right.
Go ahead. Sorry. Yeah.
Well, and I was just going to say, that's why, you know, there's always that dichotomy of whether this course is easy or whether it's difficult. And it's easy on one level because all you have to do is look at the effect, what you're feeling. Are you feeling painful? Are you feeling chaotic? Are you feeling overwhelmed? Are you feeling negative feelings? You better believe you chose the ego as your teacher. But if you're feeling peaceful, generous, loving, if you're feeling, you know, at peace, then you're choosing your right mind, the Holy Spirit or Jesus or your source, however you want to say it. You're choosing that right part of your mind. It's easy. There is no in between. It's one or the other. But the difficulty is doing something about it. You know, and saying, because I mean, quite honestly, sometimes we kind of like that pain. See, I am the victim. It proves
Absolutely.
It. It proves it. I'm the victim.
Think about it. But yeah, we get that mileage out of it. There's a couple paragraphs here that I was thinking maybe we should read because they just talk about
because
that.
Because they're so wonderful, yeah.
Paragraph 4 and 5 and the beginning of 6. Do you want to read the first one or 4?
Okay, now is that the temptation to regard? Is that 4?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
The temptation to regard problems as many is the temptation to keep the problem of separation unsolved. Mm-hmm. The world seems to present you with a vast number of problems, each requiring a different answer. This perception places you in a position in which your problem solving must be inadequate and failure is inevitable.
Yeah, there you go. And failure is inevitable because, and so poor me, I can't, there I am again, a victim, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I can't do this. It's never going to work. And so then it goes on to say in paragraph 5, no one could solve all the problems the world appears to hold. They seem to be on so many levels, in such varying forms, and with such varied content that they confront you with an impossible situation. Dismay and depression are inevitable as you regard them. Some spring up unexpectedly, just as you think you have resolved the previous ones. Others remain unsolved under a cloud of denial and rise to haunt you from time to time, only to be hidden again, but still unsolved. You know?
Mm-hmm.
That is so true. And then he says, all this complexity is but a desperate attempt not to recognize the problem and therefore not to let it be resolved. If you could recognize that your only problem is separation, no matter what form it takes, you could accept the answer because you would see its relevance. And, you know, we can't do that alone. That's why we need to take it to Jesus, Holy Spirit.
Mm-hmm. You
know? I mean, we think we see it as separate problems. The only way that we can get out of that loop of constant attack and defense is to step back out of it above the battleground to the mind and allow it to be solved there, because that's where the problem is.
Right.
You know, it's always separation. Go ahead.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and I was just going to say, skipping down when it says, be not deceived by the form of problems today.
Yes. Yep.
And, you know, whenever you are, say, let, you know, quickly say, let me recognize this problem so it can be solved. And it goes right back to what, how we kind of opened this show is, let me solve the problem where it is versus how I've set it up.
Yes.
And recognizing that we always set it up in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not going to call you up and go, guess what? I feel separated.
Right.
You know, I'm not, that's not what I'm going to do. I'm going to call you up and say, I had an argument with somebody,
mm-hmm.
or somebody treated me badly, or
right.
I'm upset because of what I heard on the news. I'm not ever going to really, you know, kind of come to grips with, I feel separated.
Right.
You know, I feel, you know, all the, we have all these other names or all these other forms. It always has to take another form.
Well, and we deliberately forgot that we set it up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is unconscious. We don't remember taking the tiny mad idea seriously, you know, of
yes.
separation seriously. We don't remember the belief that we could separate from God, failing to laugh at that belief. I mean, it did not happen, but part of the ego's plan, the defense against that belief, was to make up this whole alternate reality and run into it, you know, go fleeing, wander away from the mind into it, and you know, completely forget that we have a mind at all. So never go back to the scene of the quote unquote crime. So, you know, we're so frightened of the mind and so in denial that we have a mind outside the body, you know, that we've made up as a defense against the mind. That it's not like we don't see the problem as it is. So we need help with that. There's a part of our mind that does see the problem as it is and ultimately sees that there is no problem. I mean, the very next lesson is lesson 80, let me recognize my problems have been solved.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what
has been solved. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, what you brought up was actually one of the other things this week that I felt like I've heard it 100 times, but somehow it sounded different to me. And that is our investment in being mindless.
Yes.
You know, because I guess I, you know, that's something I struggle with because it's like, no, I'm conscious. I'm aware, you know, and it's like, no, you're not. We have an investment in being mindless because the minute we see ourselves as a mind, then we can't be that puppet. We can't be the victim of the circumstances around us.
Right.
You know, just in the same way. In fact, Ken was talking about this in the book. He said, you know, if you tell me your dream and I say, well, you made all that up because, you know, the dream, you know, a nighttime dream. I go, oh, Susan, you wouldn't believe what I was dreaming. Well, you wouldn't go, oh, my God, your sister's responsible. You'd say, oh, you did that. You made that dream up. Why did you make that up? What does that mean to you? But we don't draw the same conclusion in the world. Well, if this world is our own dream, if it is an illusion, then guess who's making it up?
Right.
And we won't hold ourselves responsible. We just won't do it because once again, we want to be separate, but we don't want to be held responsible for it.
Right. And this course is about learning, you know, being in school to learn to take 100% responsibility for every experience of feeling unfairly treated by something outside, taking it back to the mind and seeing that nothing outside my mind can take my peace away. Nothing. You know, this inside job, this is all happening in the mind. And the reason that I'm doing it because of this deep fear and guilt over something that never even happened that I'm not aware of. But, you know, this need to constantly defend myself by feeling endlessly unfairly treated is not serving me, is the source of all of my misery. And,
right.
And there is a deep comfort and loving presence in my mind where I can return, a quiet center that I can return to, within which all of these illusions are are, you know, gently looked at upon and seen as nothing, the nothingness that they are. And with, and that will always in our experience still in the, you know, seem, I mean, we're not there yet. We're not at the top of the ladder where we're aware that we're only a mind all the time. But in our experience, it will always translate into some form of, as we've talked about at the beginning of the show, seeing shared over separate interests. Getting back to that idea of making it about them, you know. We're all on the same side here. No one's really guilty here. I'm not under fire here, you know.
Yeah, and Susan, I wanted to ask you, where did you say you got that phrase of Ken's where he talks about make it about them?
Yeah.
Is it a particular book or workshop?
It's a particular workshop, and it's a CD set that's just fantastic that's available from the Foundation for A Course in Miracles website bookstore. And the title of it is Cast No One Out, and the subtitle is Making It About Them.
Okay. Oh, good. I'm going to go get that.
Yeah, it's a big one, but it's really good. And it's filled with incredibly profound practical questions about how to apply that principle.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Thank you so much. Cause I'm almost finished with the Living A Course in Miracles. So I need another fix.
Right. Which, and Living A Course in Miracles is also available from that bookstore. Mm-hmm. And like I said to you, is one of the ones that I listened to a lot as well early on in my, exploration of Ken's work early on when I came to the course. And I still recommend as one of the very best for people that are relatively new to the course too.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we have been listening to excerpts of that every other week on this show. You know, that's what we've been doing.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many more shows it's going to take, because like I said, I'm just taking excerpts from it. But we've already had, I think, four parts. Yeah. So it's been good. Maybe the next one will be Cast No One Out.
Right. Yeah,
that would be great. I mean, now we got a little teaser here. We'll listen to that one next.
Yeah.
At least excerpts of it, but I'll go get that. Thank you very much for that suggestion. And as long as I'm saying thanks, also thanks to Greg in the chat room. He posted the pictures of the Paw Patrol characters.
Oh.
And it's funny because, I mean, there again, I didn't recognize what my niece was talking about. And I realized it's Zuma she was talking about. So thank you, Greg, for showing us Paw Patrol.
That's adorable. I love that idea.
Oh, it's so funny. Well, in any case, that's off the topic, but I just wanted to say thanks. And we are getting towards the end of our show, but we're not quite there yet. So is there more of this that you want to read, or just some other points that you'd like to make about this particular lesson, or even lesson, you know, 80?
Yeah, let's see here. What have we not looked at?
Somebody's coming to buy your house.
Well, maybe I'll just read the practice section of this.
Okay. Uh-huh.
So that if people want to try to apply this lesson, they can do it. Because again, it's something that we carry into our day, which is really demonstrating what the whole point of the workbook eventually is after we've completed it, which is to make this a lifelong practice of really as we find ourselves reacting to things that seem to be in the world, bringing it back, orienting back to turning to a different teacher in our mind.
Right.
So as in our longer practice periods today, we will ask what the problem is and what is the answer to it. We will not assume that we already know. We will try to free our minds of all the many different kinds of problems we think we have. We will try to realize that we have only one problem, which we have failed to recognize. We will ask what it is. So we will ask Jesus, Holy Spirit, what it is and wait for the answer. We will be told. Then we will ask for the solution to it and we will be told. And so it's really, again, you know, just opening, joining with that love in our mind and first recognizing that we must be wrong about what the problem is. And we'll know when we receive the answer, because again, it will always come in some form of not of shifting us back to the awareness of shared interests over separate interests.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm going to read the next paragraph because I think this is good too. The exercises for today will be successful to the extent to which you do not insist on defining the problem. Perhaps you will not succeed in letting all of your preconceived notions go, but that is not necessary. All that is necessary is to entertain some doubt about the reality of your version of what the problems are. You are trying to recognize that you have been given the answer by recognizing the problem so that the problem and the answer can be brought together and you can be at peace.
Excellent, yes. And that entertaining some doubt, you know, could really, that's the first step of forgiveness. You know, maybe I'm wrong about the problem. Maybe the cause, maybe I'm wrong about the cause of why I'm angry, why I'm depressed, why I'm anxious, why I'm frustrated, you know, whatever it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's not because of what somebody said to me or did to me or something that occurred to me from my childhood, you know, about why I can't be the kind of person I want to be or what, you know, whatever it is or what I saw in the news or the phone call I just got or what's happening in my body. And to just say, you know, maybe I'm wrong. And I would like to see the problem as it is and not the way I set it up, right? Let me recognize the problem so it can be solved, because that goes back to the very thing that brought the course, seemed to bring the course into our dream, which was Helen and Bill's, you know, Bill's statement to Helen that there has to be another way, a better way of relating in this world. And that's a question we should be asking throughout our day as we find ourselves in conflict in our relationships.
Mm-hmm. There's got to be a better way.
Yeah.
Who doesn't resonate with that?
Right.
So on that note, Susan, thank you so much for joining me today and for this suggestion. As always, just a wonderful and encouraging discussion. Do you have any announcements you'd like to make before we close the show today?
I guess just another plug for the Foundation for A Course in Miracles. They are, Jeff Siebert is teaching again there, and there's information on their website under programs, under announcements, and I think, and then you go to programs, and so you can look there for some of those. I think there's still some open in the next few months, and I'm trying to think. The other thing that I wanted to, I've been going back to some of the interviews that I had actually done with Ken Wapnick that are on my website. And I'm just amazed at, I did some interviews with him over a period of a few years that are all based on practical, you know, kind of practical application of A Course in Miracles. And there's really some great material there of Ken talking about, you know, in answer to specific questions that I was bringing up about my own, you know, things that were coming up in my life that are really meant to be universal for all of us. So, if you want to go to my website, forisandforgiveness.com, and go to those interviews section, you'll find a wealth of material there too, with interviews with Ken and then also interviews with the Foundation for A Course in Miracles staff teachers, which are also, you know, really incredibly practical and helpful.
Okay. And Susan, I went ahead and I did post your website, forisinforgiveness.com, in the chat room over on Facebook, and also the link to the Foundation for A Course in Miracles, which both Susan and I will always keep sending you there, because they not only have that online bookstore, but they just have a wealth of information. You can just kind of get lost on that website. There's so much great information. So we would really encourage you to go over there as well. So everybody, thank you for joining me today, for joining us. Thanks for listening, and thanks for coming into the chat room and posting Paw Patrol and a number of other things. That coffee, Liliana posted a picture of coffee, and now I've wanted coffee for 45 minutes now. Thank you. I'm so easily, you know, swayed that way. But thank you so much for joining me and being here today. And I hope that you will stay tuned, because our producer, Brittany, is going to have a whole host of other live shows here today. So, Brittany, thank you for being here. And I do hope that you will stay tuned, because there's lots of other good shows coming up after me. So keep it tuned to 1-2 Radio. And also, you know, just think about what we've said today, and think about, you know, where are those problems? Where are those problems really? You know, and are we willing to kind of change our minds about them? So that's what I'd say closing the show. You have been listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks and my guest, Susan Dugan, on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way you think about problems.